Another week, another emotional rollercoaster here in RG2. The Royals stuttered on the pitch, but all eyes are once again on the boardroom as Pang and Dai all but confirm to fans that they intend to asset strip the club. And yet again, we the fans are the ones that are left to suffer. We're short by £1 million this month. £1 million. Ross, have you got any spare change, mate?
Has anyone got £1 million on the back of their sofa? Yeah, I'm not really, it's not really something that I can spare just at this point. If only you'd asked me last month, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a shortfall and then there is a Reading Football Club shortfall. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later on, but it's not been the best weekend once again in Berkshire. So, anyway, welcome to episode 374 of
the Welcome Tales along, everyone.
The show still goes on. We're still here. We're still plugging away. We don't take any money from fans for doing this. So if we can try and raise a little bit of cash, then we will pass it on to the club. But funny enough, we don't get much revenue doing this podcast either. So we'll do the best that we can. Guys that do give us a little bit of revenue, though, in order to pay for mics that work and all this sort of stuff. ZCZ Films, as always, are very good friends and very proud sponsors. So thank you to those guys. We aren't thankful for the chair boys, though, Ross, are we? So we're going to get into the Wickham recap after this short break.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Talking to mics, Ross has just reminded me to sit away from mine because it's one of those things where I feel like...
Just a little. I just don't want the listeners to have more Ben than they can handle, you're a large audio experience and I don't want them to be overblown.
It's one of those where it's all very new. Obviously, I don't have any... Well, we're not professional now. We're a professional joke of a podcast, basically, but... It's just one of those things. I feel like my granddad used to be, where he'd sort of see something new and you kind of go towards it like a moth to a bulb or whatever. But I just feel like I'm getting closer to it. Yeah. Anyway, shut up.
Look, mate, the important thing is, before you get started, you know more about how to use a mic than Dai Yong Pang knows about how to sell a football club. Exactly. So, hey, you're doing pretty good there.
Exactly. That's I'm holding on to that. I'm literally clutching my heart because that's... That's a good way of looking at it for sure. Right, Wickham. What can we say, really? It's a game that we all thought we had in the bag, rightly or wrongly. First half was trash. Second half was a little bit better, Ross. Why is that?
Yeah, it was a little bit of an odd one, wasn't it? So obviously the thing that people will point to with this is that Savage was brought on at halftime. And I do think that that was the correct mode or the correct move at the time. But I think it's also worth noting that, Wickham were pretty good in the first half. I actually thought Wickham were the best team to come to the Medeski since Derby. And so especially in the first half, I saw them sort of jumping onto our build-up much more than any other team has at the Medeski in recent weeks. So Binden and Mbenge and Wing were getting a lot less time than they have been doing recently to actually start building plays up. And that was really causing us issues. Wickham were in a 4-3-3, but they were defending in a 4-1-4-1, something we've seen a lot, obviously, this season. And basically, they just had their two eights in that front four, just sitting on whoever it was who was trying to pass out from the middle. So Reading have actually got better at that in recent weeks. For whatever reason, Wickham saw that and they countered that. So yeah, really in the first half, I actually thought it was a decent game plan from Wickham and that caused us issues. Coming into the second half, I think that we did need some sort of change up and Savage provided that. I've been getting a little frustrated with Craig over the last few weeks. I think that Ben, that I've been one of Craig's biggest defenders this season, and I do really like what he offers the team. I think it's great that we have two young 20-something center mids that could both potentially become huge assets for the club, in a well-run club environment, basically. But I think that for this game, Savage was the correct decision because Craig has just been, he doesn't play as many line breaking passes and he's been pulling back from those recently, whereas Savage seems to realize that that's the way he can keep his place in the team. So I just think that more of what we've seen recently was what we saw. I'm going to be a little bit frustrated if we start Craig against Derby because I understand why the temptation would be to do that. But I'm getting to the point where I think at this stage in the season, Reading play better with Savage and the team. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Wickham.
Yeah, I was smiling there because, everyone knows, listen to this, that I kind of feel pretty strongly about Charlie Savage in terms of him being in the team. And I just felt it was a perfect game for him to start. It's difficult because obviously we won against Carlisle and I've always been really clear that you don't change a winning side, but I just... I completely agree with you. I just felt that this was a really good game for him to play, Savage in terms of what he can do. And it's difficult because, we're obviously a million miles away, but, you remember in the championship winning season, the 106 season, when we would always change Bobby Convey with Stephen Hunt. And it feels like we're getting into that kind of substitution mold again, where it's like, well, if it's not working, we'll take Craig off and we'll stick Savage on. There's got to be other alternatives to try and affect the game. Obviously, we're not there because we don't have the strength in depth so much. So
I think we're getting to the point where Craig needs another preseason now to sort of reflect on what he's done in the past 12 months and go on and improve again, basically.
And I'm not sure, but he didn't look like he was moving particularly freely in that first half. So whether or not he's carrying a knock potentially, I don't know. But
he did pick one up against Port Vale, so it's possible, yeah.
Yeah, so, maybe he does need to spell out the team, but for me, I just think we're always better attacking-wise with Savage, and I think it allows Wing to be Lewis Wing, basically. But, there are obviously 10 other players that we can talk about, really. There's talk a little bit about Sam Smith as well, because obviously he's had a bit of a difficult time of late up front, but, the last couple of games... seems like it's clicking for him. Let's talk about, obviously his goal, but that one-on-one really that should have been tucked away. Do you think he's kind of lacking confidence at the moment, Ross? Or is it just one of those spells that strikers tend to go through?
I don't know if he's lacking confidence so much as just lacking opportunities to even influence play. Like, he'd hardly got any of the ball at all in the first half against Wickham. I think, to be honest, if you convert 33-50% of your decent opportunities, you're doing kind of fine as a striker. I don't think you're going to... I obviously, understand, you want to put away a one-on-one and things like that, but sometimes the goalie makes a good save and... you're not going to score all of them, even with decent, even if after you've hit the shot, it's got decent, expected goals on target or whatever. So I just think he hasn't had many opportunities to affect play, really. And whether that's on him is something that I'm kind of looking forward to researching a bit more. Because I think that the way in which strikers are used in the modern game is very interesting, especially a striker like Sam Smith, who he's 6 foot, so he's not small, but he's not a big target man or anything like that necessarily. And yeah, I would say he does the hold up play part of the game better than some of the big, hold up players that we've had in the last couple of years, like Carroll. We tried to do it with Zhao forever, never really worked out. But no, I just think he's just not really been getting the opportunities recently. I was very happy with the header against Wickham at the weekend. Thought that obviously Aziz generated some of the power on that shot with a really nice angled cross. But Smith really whipped his head around to get something extra on that. I don't know if he's ever going to be, because I don't think he's been yet. I don't think he's ever really going to be a 20 goal a season striker. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I am wrong about that. Because a minute ago I was saying that he's not getting enough opportunities. I just don't know what to make of Sam Smith, really, Ben. I think that's where I'm at. But I think he's definitely, he's our best striker we've had for a few years at that singular role, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he is no doubt that, you know, I said when we started this pod way back in July, I rather took over the pod, that I wasn't sure. I'm never really sure when players come back. And he's definitely bucked that trend for me. And I feel really grateful for him. You know, I feel grateful for a lot of the players, but for a player of his caliber and kind of what he can do and what he can achieve, it is a real positive. The problem is that we need other players around him to supplement that as well. So,
yeah,
you know, but that's not going to happen in a while, really, given the financial situations that we currently find ourselves in. I mean, you know, if you look overall at the game on Saturday, I mean, do you feel like we should have got something out of the game, having got ourselves back in and we're kind of pushing for, you know, almost the 3 points, really? Or do you feel that Wickham were, you know, deserved winners overall based on the kind of power of play that they had, really?
I think a 1-1 draw would have been about right. And honestly, I think Reading almost might have been a little bit lucky to get Reading. Wickham were good. I really think Wickham were good in the first half. I think that not only were they playing pretty well, you had some individual players playing very well. They had a guy who scored a bicycle kick, for flip's sake. And then they had Gareth McCleary, who was clearly very motivated. And then later on, they were able to bring on some players as well, like Vokes, who are not amazing anymore, but they're not terrible players at that level, and they do a job. So I really thought Wickham were all right, and I just think that a 1-1 would have probably been about right for the game. Obviously, it's not what we want to hear, because last week we were talking about how we need to win all of these home games. But yeah, I think a 1-1 was all Reading really deserved on Saturday. If they had got the win, then I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be mad. I think that Reading, the performance from both teams meant that a draw was probably about the right result.
I mean, we stay, I say, healthy. We don't want to be anywhere near the relegation zone, but it wasn't, you know, we're still in an okay position league-wise. As we said last week on the pod, we collectively felt, the pair of us, that we will get relegated because of the points deductions. And
right,
given the news that broke this weekend and has broken, well, we're only on Monday, but the start of this week in terms of £1 million and all this sort of stuff, like it's another game, another opportunity in this block of games where we should really be picking up 3 points based on the form and the quality that we've got in the team. It goes down as another frustrating one, I have to say, you know, very, yeah, very disappointed with the result. But, you know, we've got another opportunity. Well, we've got two opportunities this week, which we'll talk about later on. Not looking so good for tomorrow against Derby away, but we always knew that was going to be the case in this section of games. But looking at Cambridge, you know, it becomes a must win again because of this, you know, this constant sword of Damocles. Is that right? Mm. That is right.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, there's definitely dangling. And there's a good episode. Oh, this is a really niche reference, but there's a good level in Tomb Raider where there's lots of swords of Damocles hanging over your head. And yes, that's Reading this season.
Exactly. Right. God, I love that game. I love that game so much.
No, I love Tomb Raider, but yeah.
Wow, that set me off on a. That's going to send me down a rabbit hole now.
Yeah, you're off on a nostalgia run now for the rest of. I'll see you again. I'll keep talking football, guys. And Ben, you go off and do that for a bit. So anyway, Reading were founded in 1871. Anyway, moving on.
Well, just think about Laura Croft, and then I realised that she wasn't actually a real person.
Well, still a British icon, still a British treasure, you know.
Anyway, snap out of it, Ben. Come on, there's a podcast today. Right, let's close Wickham down. Let's move on, if we can ever, at this football club, and let's go into the mailbag.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, we'll start the mailbag with Benjamin Vickers, because that is basically tradition.
It is Benjamin Vickers' mailbag, to be fair.
Even though it's not the order of which the questions came in, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
Hello, Benjamin Vickers, once again. We welcome you with open arms. Della/... Oh, this is... God, this is not one for you, Ross, given how you feel about these guys. Gooding's opinion of Ben Elliott is that he flatters to deceive. Goodness me. Goodness me. Was Kelvin E for Ben E at halftime the right thing to do? Shoot.
That's a good question, though.
From Benjamin, to be fair.
They are, yeah. Benjamin, I'm going to leave the BBC part of your question well alone. But I will say, I don't think that was the right sub, personally. I'm more sold on Kelvin on the left than some others. Not as a permanent solution, don't get me wrong. I don't think that that's going to solve our issues next season and going beyond. But I actually think that this season he has been the best occupier of that space, outside of like some weird halves from Makairu and things like that. I do not think Ben Elliott is a left-sided player at all. I just really don't. He gets no touches when he's out there. He's not particularly useful at helping out defensively. It's not making the most of his strength.
Didn't he play against Eastleigh as well when he was absolutely...
Yeah. And the worst thing is, if you look at his heat map, he doesn't want to be there. He drifts around. So like he gets stuck out on the left and he hovers around there for a little bit. But if you look at his heat map, he's popping up all over the place as he usually does. He comes off into the center anyway. He doesn't want to be on the left. We've got to stop doing it. It's one of the most frustrating misuses of a player I've seen in quite a long time. I think that we've seen him play some really good football from the middle. And I don't care if that's in like the 8, 6 or 10 position. I think Elliott can do all of it. It really bothers me when he's on one of the flanks. That Ben Elliott should always be playing central. And so maybe you could have switched Kelvin then from a Kairu, but I don't think that would have even been the right move. I think Kelvin's playing all right out on the left personally, and he offers very dynamic moments in which things can happen. I'm not saying he doesn't offer a lot of time when nothing really happens with him, but he seems to have noticed recently that he does better when he picks the ball up deeper and he starts to run towards the opposition, and he's been using that pretty effectively. I just really hate switching him for Elliott overall, though. That's my primary thing.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to, you know, where we're at with the squad generally.
It's
very, very difficult. I mean, I like Kelvin generally on the left. I'm not sure he's been great recently, but then you could say that about a lot of players, to be honest. It's a good point. I mean, flatter to deceive, I think, is baffling, really, because we all know he's got pedigree. You don't, you know, regardless of what people say, you don't come from clubs like Chelsea, you don't come from clubs like United with Savage. You know, there is pedigree there. There has to be.
Right.
Because otherwise you wouldn't get to that point in the first place. So flatter to deceive is bonkers. But it's not the first time we've had this situation.
With that, though, is that like I don't think Elliott does a whole lot outside of when he does pop up, he can be effective. Like he can pop up and then like throw a decent pass through into like the final third. I think the first goal that Aziz scored this season, he put the ball over the top there against Carlisle. So I don't think he flatters to deceive at all. I think it's pretty much the opposite. I think that he never really gets a chance in his actual position to show us what he can do. So he just does what he can when he's there. He's not a left-sided player at all.
Yeah. Well, we're back into the Paul Ince syndrome, aren't we, really, in terms of like not really knowing what to do with these players that we've got. You know, it was him that famously said that Mbengue couldn't play centre-back, and look at him now. So... yeah,
my favorite Reading manager quote ever on this is Paunovic saying we don't need to worry about positions, which just always made me laugh. I know where he's coming from. It just always, maybe always made me laugh.
He was almost too forward thinking with that, wasn't he?
He was Paunovic would sometimes miss the forest for the trees, shall we say.
Yeah, exactly. Georgie Dawes back again. George, love that. Absolutely bewildering first half from everyone, players and sellers, which is best forgotten. I hope they've all learned the lesson that you need to start games on the front foot. I know I keep banging on about it, but it's the reason I prefer Savage starting. This is why I like you, George, because you say things like, I prefer Savage starting. Well done. We talked about Wickham earlier, didn't we? It was, bewildering is a good phrase. Do you think, I know it's not fashionable to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway because I always like to go against the grain. Do you think Sellers needs to cop a little bit of blame for how it kind of panned out on Saturday?
Yeah, because I don't think that Craig staying in the team, you know, or bringing off Kelvin at halftime were the right moves. But I will say about Sellers is that at least we have a manager who's capable of adjusting things at halftime and then making, you know, yeah. Here's the thing, right? If we did this with Paul Ince a season ago, we'd play that first half out and then we go out and play the exact same second half, right? Whereas Sellers is at least capable of going, ah, I mucked that up. I'm now going to make this change and then we're going to do this. My issue is that he'll often make the same mistake two or three times. And it's like, how many times do you need to be shown Savage is playing better right now than Craig? How many times do you need to be shown Elliot can't play on the left? You know, that's where the issues come in for me in game. When his back's to the wall, I actually think Sellers is a really good manager. I think that sometimes he overthinks it. And when he's just relying on his instincts are good. But yeah, I think that he's going to cop a little bit of blame for that one. Just real quick on the slow starts. I think this is something that Reading really need to address because I think that the way this team is built, we're a team that are built to play from the front, play in the lead. I don't necessarily think we do well when we have to chase a game. We get very, you know, we have to open up our formation and that sort of reasonable defensive shape that we have starts to get stretched apart and starts to cause issues, you know. So I think that if Reading played kind of like England play in tournaments, whereby they go really, really hard to try and score in the first 15 minutes and then calm it down, that would probably be a more preferable way for me to see the team play than what they do now, which tends to be taking a good half hour to warm up and then a lot of the game is gone before you can really start influencing proceedings. So I'd like to see them make more effort to get out in front earlier in the games for sure.
Josh Buck says, we got boxed in very well by Wickham in the first half and defaulted to lumping it long. If we're going to play like this, do we need a new striker because Smith struggles latching onto them up front? Do we need a new striker, Ross?
No, yes, no, I don't know, actually. What do you think?
Yes.
Yes, I feel like yes, but not because Smith can't do this, necessarily. I don't know how you feel about that, though.
Well, I think we need, you know, at least an extra player in every position, to be honest.
Yeah.
There were times this season where it's worked really well. Like, we've had a lot of strength and depth, and we've had a lot of, you know, when everyone's fit, we've had choices, but you know, we've managed to dig ourselves out of very big holes with very limited resources, but we've been doing that for quite a long time. I don't know.
My worry with taking Smith out of the team right now would be that I think that Reading's best player for the last month or so has been Harvey Nibbs. And I'm not convinced you can find a better starting striker to play with Nibs than Smith with our restrictions right now. So yes, it would be nice to have more depth, but I think considering the way in which he interacts with one of our most important players in Harvey Nibs, I think he's I quite like Smith. I think that the resorting to chucking the ball long on Saturday was actually a result of Wing having not the best game. Yeah, that would be more where that long ball stuff was coming from for me, because we've seen Smith, when the balls are accurate, get onto long balls, and we've seen him have to chase after David Button miscues. But I think he is capable of playing in the long ball game personally.
I don't think we have any viable alternatives to him. And I'm not,
no.
Yeah, I'm not being disrespectful to players like Wareham or whatever, but I don't, there isn't anyone else. You know, you look at the bench, and you think, well, if we need to change up front, which what goes back to what I'm saying about the, you know, the Craig Savage swap all the time, it doesn't seem to be any other natural substitution to be made. And I think that's ultimately the worry long term. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think, Josh, we need players everywhere, but we know we're not going to get them. So it becomes very difficult, really.
That's actually great, but we need a team everywhere, as Ben says, and we need a team of this quality as depth if we're going to go up as well, basically, if not better. So yeah, we need players everywhere.
Salopcast, who some of you may know, are the they're the goats of like League One podcasting, really. They are the Shrewsbury voice, in my opinion. They've chipped in with a comment, which is always really, it's always quite encouraging when you get that from another podcast, you know, from a different club. Like, I don't know, that made me feel really good. Doesn't matter what.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's just, what's up? It's what's like up, Salop? Good to hear from you.
They say, another inconsistent performance, We have been suffering from this issue all season. Yeah, but we're sick of playing you, though, so what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're taking 6 points off us, mates.
Right, I know, yeah. I don't want to hear anything about it. Actually, yeah, now you say it like that, I don't want to hear anything about what Shrewsbury are up to.
Maybe they just said it as a pity vote or pity
comment. Yeah, exactly, exactly. They're just, yeah, they're just trying to make sure everything is all right. They're just seeing what's going on. A little bit of ambulance chat. I'm kidding, obviously. I'm kidding. Inconsistent performance.
You can't tell a Shrewsbury fan that they're ambulance chasing.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair, actually. I'll leave that with just Reading City or whatever it is, the people on the other side of town or whatever. Anyway, yeah, exactly. Yes, I guess another inconsistent performance, Shrewsbury fans. And yeah, just, it is frustrating, right? Like, we're getting quite good now at pulling just clear of the relegation zone, but not getting far enough away to completely start worrying. I'm so sick of worrying about relegation. It's been 3 blinking years. I'm so sick of it.
It's just on our minds all the time.
Yeah, like every time I think of my freaking club, all I can think of is, oh, we might still go down, which is just, yeah, it's never fun.
Thanks for that, guys. Appreciate you chipping in, because it's nice to hear from different podcasts.
And I don't think Shrewsbury are going to go down, if that makes you feel better. So that's the counterweight for me calling you guys ambulance chasers.
Do you know what? Talking about other clubs, right? I saw this comment today, and someone said that Bristol City are the most pointless club ever because they just sit on around about 13th, 14th in the Championship. And they never threaten promotion. They never threaten relegation.
Yeah.
They just sit there. Honestly, I can't stop thinking about it. It just made me really laugh. Like the way
I find Preston are in that hole as well. They've fallen into the memory hole part of the Championship. Cardiff are sort of in danger of that too at the moment, I think. Yeah, Swansea and Cardiff.
And Swansea. Dorinio? His handle is Basil Stush, which I think is quite funny.
Nice.
For me, it's just come down, for him, not for me, for them, for whoever. It's just come down to us getting enough points from the remaining games to stay up. Good, bad, or ugly. We just need those points in the bag. Yeah. Can't really add anything to that.
I mean, pretty much.
Pretty much nailed it, hasn't it?
I wouldn't put it beyond this Reading team. I know we're going to go into it, so I won't say too much, but I wouldn't put it beyond this Reading team to win at Derby. You know, yes, we've just gone ahead and lost at home to Wickham, but this Reading team is odd, and I wouldn't be super surprised if they go ahead and win next. But yeah, any points anywhere, we'll take them.
83rd minute, Charlie Savage winner against his dad's old club.
All right, nice. There you go. He'll almost certainly be there, won't he, actually?
I would imagine he will go. Right, this is like an interest. It's not interesting. It's a great question from our very own Tom Hill, because he's part of our group now. We're not letting him go. He's going to come on again. We're doing like a tactics thing, aren't we, pretty soon? So he's going to come on again and do that. He said, I was surprised at our fan base's frustration at the overhead kick, as I think there's not just much you can do about it defensively. I completely messed that up. I'm going to read it again and do it justice.
Yeah.
I'll start again. I was trying to waffle my way out of it, and it just didn't work. Right. Big breath. I was surprised at our fan base's frustration at the overhead kick, as I think there's not really much you can do defensively about those sorts of goals. So, what's the best, most unstoppable goal you've ever seen live? And for this segment of the mailbag, we're calling it shit pingers. That's what we're calling this section, right? So I've got 3. I've been thinking about this a lot since this question came in on Sunday. I've got 3 shit pingers. How many have you got?
I think one of my Thunder Bastards is one of yours. So we'll see. One or two, I guess.
I'll tell you what. I'll go first.
Yeah.
And then you can go, and then we'll talk about our mutual one.
All right, that sounds good.
And for those of you who can't see, I'm kind of doing, you know, when people say mutual and they put their hands together, that's what I'm doing, like joining hands, fingers, you know what I mean? Right. My first chip hanger is Jason Roberts versus Southampton in that game. And the reason for that is you will never, ever see a more unstoppable header in your life. Rumour has it to this day that that ball is still moving in Hampshire. I've never seen a header like it. Honestly, if that had gone through the net, it would have killed someone.
Yeah. Like, this is a good question now.
The neck force on it was, it was just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. Okay. And there was nothing you could do. Kelvin Davis had no chance at that point.
Yeah. Classic. I've never known. This is a good question for the listeners as much as all of us. Can a header be a shit pigger? / a Thunder Bastard. And I apologize for the language coming out right now, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, if any under 18s are listening to this, please don't tell your parents or your carers.
No.
It just happens. And what will happen after now is that Ross will have to put a little E when he publishes this, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Language. Just for this one. People will wonder what's happened to her.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with... I'm going to go next. I'm going to go with the John Swift hit against QPR that won us the game in that little stretch under Bowen around Christmas where we went on a run the season after, or the season that he joined, and basically stayed up on that run that happened. And Swift, you know, hit a really sweet one from outside the box, as he did. Oh, as he, you know, did fairly frequently, and as Wing is starting to show us a little bit off too. So, yeah, got to go Swift against QPR.
That is a good shit pinger.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, actually, do you know what? I had one more, but I've actually thought of another one, so I'm going to do them real quick.
All right,
next one. and to be fair, I'm cheating on this one because I didn't see this one live.
Okay.
It was Marek Matiowski up at Liverpool in 2008. And honestly, the swaz on that shot was just brutal. And he was almost like a one-hit wonder, that bloke. Like, that goal was outrageous. I think it was so good that it was even like the Premier League goal of the day a couple of months ago, potentially.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do remember seeing it.
It was an outrage. And the final one, before we talk about our mutual shit pinger, was Gareth McCleary away at QPR when he kind of... It's difficult to explain. Everyone knows the guy I'm talking about. But it was like, it was just great. It was so, so good. And he was wearing an absolute classic kit, that black strip as well with the red in it. Amazing. Mm-hmm.
That is important.
Amazing. And it was against QPR. So what's not to love, really?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, John, I'm going to...
Yeah, no, you got to love it. Actually, yeah, if we're talking quicker, before we go into that, but quick one, Elise Curler against QPR at Loftus Road. Very, very nice shot. I love the ones that don't look particularly fast, but because of the way, you know, the curl has worked and where it's bouncing, they're just an absolute nightmare for a goalkeeper. Yeah. Love those.
Go on then, do you want to talk about our mutual one?
Oh yeah, the mutual one. This is the best goal I've ever seen live in any stadium, let alone the Medeski Stadium. And this would be the day when Reading, I think we, and Ben, help me out, because I think we drew 2-2 in total in the end that day. But Gareth McCleary, maybe when we were chasing the game, hit a volley pure out of the sky from 2 to 5 yards outside of the box, I don't even, maybe further down the middle, and I don't think I've ever seen a ball falling and then hit as sweetly as it was then, just top corner, no chance for the goalkeeper, like so much power because you're taking it out of the air and redirecting it and kicking it, like just it's one of those things that reminds you that yes, you're watching the Championship, yes, you're watching League One, whatever. These guys, when they have time, are still so talented. And some of the muscle memory that they have can do things that is just...
It's ridiculous.
The reason we love football, right?
I mean, that game was memorable because there was a pitch invasion for finishing seventh. because a section of fans had been wrongly communicated that we got into the playoffs.
Right.
And it was, and everyone was buzzing, and I was buzzing as well, to be fair. And then it just collapsed like a warm Easter egg because we finished seventh. And that was really sad, actually, because that was a good team, and we kind of got back into it, really. And I was a massive fan of Nigel Adkins as well, you know, right man at the wrong time. So that was a bit sad. I'm literally just watching this goal, this Gareth McCleary goal again from 2014.
I'm just gonna jump back on what you were saying about Adkins too, because I liked Adkins a lot as well. And when we spoke to Nick Blackman earlier in the year, I sort of broached Adkins a little bit. And obviously I've seen a lot of Southampton games as well. So I like Nigel Adkins. I think he's a decent manager and he seems like a fantastic man. And doing some really good stuff again, where he is now. I can't quite remember. Maybe Southend. I can't remember. Blackman wasn't quite as keen on him. And it wasn't to do with like how he was as a person. It was more to do with the fact that Adkins clearly had no use for Blackman and his team. And that causes issues, obviously, because that's your profession. That's what you want to be playing. I just thought that was very interesting. I thought that was an interesting thing he pulled aside. Go back and listen to the Nick Blackman interview, guys, because it's really good.
It is a very good podcast, I have to say. Very, very good. I actually feel now Gareth McCleary against QPR in the 3-1 win was better than the Burnley one. Have a look at it. Just go on YouTube and have a look at it.
Yeah.
Or another streaming service that does videos from history.
Are there any?
It's really good. Yeah. Talking of really good, fingers crossed that this coming week is going to be really good. And we're going to talk about the two games we've got coming up in the preview right about now.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Derby, Pride Park, tricky one. I think 800 Reading fans are going up tomorrow, up across wherever you are in the world. What realistically, what's the best case scenario for us in that game?
I don't think any of the top teams in League One, you know, apart from maybe Portsmouth, are unbeatable for Reading. And even against Portsmouth, we saw Reading play pretty well. And like I said earlier, I'm not unconvinced that we could go to Derby and get at least a point, if not more. Now, look, I'm not going to be overly optimistic. Obviously, they've won 3 of their last 5, and they are 5 points off the top of the league, you know, with 9 games to go. So they're obviously a very good team. They've kept it consistent all season. They've got Bolton and Peter, you know, absolutely breathing down their necks to get into that second automatic spot. So don't get me wrong. Derby are a good team. They could beat us pretty handily if they show up. You know, their fans are engaged. They're ready to go on Tuesday. But this Reading team has really great spirit. They react well to poor results, I think, in a way that maybe they haven't in previous years. And I think, you know, you saw quite a few of the Reading players just really collapse to the ground at the end of the Wickham game. This is going to stick with them. I think that they really want to, I think we're going to see a performance from Reading, even if we don't see a result that we want tomorrow. Nibs and one other, I think, collapsing to the ground in anguish after that game finished. And amusingly, Tyler Bindon was the first into the pile of Wickham players to start, you know, shaking their hands and getting himself off the field.
I mean, it's, you know, the beauty of being in the lower leagues, of course, is that you've always got a game within sort of, you know, 3 days. So,
yeah,
you know, that there's an opportunity to bounce back. I mean, sidestepping away from us a little bit, do you, and without doing literally zero research, because I haven't for this question, do you think that Derby will get promoted one way or another this season?
That's a really good question. I like Bolton personally for that other for that other spot, but Peterborough have won four in a row. I think it's really hard to. I think that one of those top five teams, or two, sorry, of those top five teams are going to miss out, right? So I don't think Stevenage are going to make it through the playoffs. I don't think they're. I think that a good side can make Stevenage look like the League Two side they were last year. Derby, Bolton, Peterborough and Barnsley are probably the ones that are competing. I think Barnsley is starting to fall off a little bit. I think... No, I don't think Derby are going up this year. Let's just kick the bee's nest, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it... it's Portsmouth to chuck, isn't it, really? I think Bolton will squeeze in, and I'd prefer that in a way as well. Like, they've been through it and got a good manager. We're completely stepping away from what we're actually talking about, but it is sort of relevant, so bear with us. I guess, really, in terms of where Derby are at, they would look at this game as a kind of, you know, rubber stamp and getting those 3 points. So they'll be confident. Mm-hmm. There'll be a lot of people, as there always is at Derby, to be fair to them, that, you know, they have numbers up there. But part of me just feels like we might actually be able to nick something out of the game. And I don't know why. I don't know why I have that feeling at the moment.
No, I agree with you. And I think Smith and Nibs feed off a good home crowd when they're away, by the way. I think they like it. I think they like giving it up a home group a bit. I don't think they're bothered by fans cheering. At all. And it is something that can bother players. We saw it looked like Matty Carson was kind of bothered by being, you know, in a loud stadium at times at the start of the year. So yeah, no, I've got a good feeling about it too. Watch us get beat 4 or 5 now, but you know.
we started pretty well against Portsmouth and then collapsed. You hope it doesn't turn into one of those games, really.
We need Button to have a very unremarkable game.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how it goes. And then, of course, we've really got the the big one, as they all are now, particularly at home, against Cambridge on Saturday, which is the grassroots game, fourth grassroots game of the year, when there's, you know, local schools and clubs and stuff, you know, selling discounted tickets or rather promoting discounted tickets through the club. And really, it kind of leads us on to what we want to close with, really, in terms of, you know, that statement, in terms of all the stuff that's come out today. As of Monday, there is an awful lot of fundraising going on now. You know, our Elm Park Royals, the other podcast that is available for all podcast channels, they're kind of heavily pushing the fundraising for tickets and stuff, which is superb. Sell Before We Die are kind of, you know, trying to get... with the help of Star, people with fundraising backgrounds, and, you know, any kind of businesses that can kind of chuck in anything, really, to kind of help push this shortfall further away from where we're at. And really, you know, we've avoided talking about that statement, which came out yesterday on Mother's Day of all days as well. Like, nothing sacred, is it? Ross, what were your kind of initial reactions to you know, the news of the training ground basically being a separate sale, hypothetically speaking?
It's just similar to how I felt when we found out that some of the people within the ownership group were surprised that offers were lower after players were sold. These people do not understand how football works, and so they're going to do things like this that don't make any sense. It is frustrating. It's very frustrating because obviously it's disruptive to the process that they've apparently empowered Nigel Howe with. No idea how this all comes together with that. I think that they really need to, if they are serious about selling at all, they need to just say a price that they're okay hearing and then get out of the way, because clearly any time that they get involved, they don't know what they're doing. So I don't see why they try and make statements like this about things that affect the football side personally. If you don't understand that selling your assets makes your general product worthless, I don't know where to start with you in football or business sense. So it's just nonsense, isn't it, really?
I mean, that's a good point. My initial response was like, you know, if I'm looking to buy a football club, and I can see that these guys are basically making up as they go along, which they are. You know, we've heard more from them in the last 6 months than we have in the last 3 or 4 years. And it's out of sheer and utter desperation. There was no point putting that out. There was absolutely no point. It doesn't really act like a come and get me plea. It just looks like you don't know what you're doing. And actually, if I'm, you know, taking my red and tinted glasses off for a minute, I'm looking at it as a businessman and going, well, hold on a second. You're asking for 20, 30 million for the whole thing, but you're telling me that different parts could be sold to different people before I get there.
Right.
So I might as well just wait until you go into admin and I'll pick you up for £5. Like, well, you know, it makes a difference to me because I still want to own a football club if I'm going into that arena. But what I want to do is pay the absolute minimum and then build it and go from there. As fans, obviously, that's the worst case scenario for us because we don't want to go into admin. We don't want to get relegated. We don't want to go for another torturous summer like we did last year. But really, at this point in time, we're not, you know, with the best will in the world, and I'm not trying to be defeatist, and I admire all of these efforts, and I'll do as much as I can in terms of my own financial commitments to it. But, like, raising £1 million in a couple of weeks is incredibly difficult, incredibly difficult. And unless someone comes in now and goes, yeah, here's an upfront interest-free loan, crack on and do what you need to do, and then I'll buy the club. If it's not happened between, you know, what, October, November time, when it was sort of really starting to heat up, then it's not going to happen now, is it? I just don't see that. And the frustration really is that I just don't feel that anyone, my current opinion at the moment, is anyone knows what they're doing.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think that is I am not a person who can purchase a club, but I am a person who can read statements and keep track of what's going on with the news. And as you very well said there, Ben, the main thing that I'm getting off this is they have no idea what they're doing and they're making it up as they go along. And it's incredibly frustrating as somebody who actually cares about the club, obviously.
Absolute idiots. They really are. We know that. That's not news. That's not... You know, we're not giving you a podcast exclusive here. They're just, it's just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. But we move. We continue to go to games. We continue to do podcasts. We continue to buy shirts, scarves, whatever. You know, whatever it is that can, you know, promote the club and put a little bit of money back in and, you know, continue to put focus on it, then that's what we'll do as a fan base. It's what we've done all season, packing out away ends. Trying to pack out the Madstad now for the last few home games of the year or the season, and we can only do what we can do. Stick together, keep moving, and hopefully stay in the league is really what we want to do. So, Ross, listen, thank you so much for joining me. What time is it with you now?
It's only 6:20 for me because it's only 4 hours behind. But Ben came on late with me, guys. So please thank Ben. Thank Ben more than me in the pod next time. It's still a reasonable hour for me.
That is basically what I was looking for as an answer. So thanks for
That's what I thought. Don't worry.
Because why would I ask you what time it was otherwise? There's no point.
Yeah.
So, just to emphasize that I'm well past my bedtime.
It is well past your bedtime. Well, let's finish this up for the good people here. But thank you, Ben, and thank you on behalf of the TTE listeners. For your efforts today. We very much appreciate you.
Good. I appreciate all of you, and don't ever forget that. Just turning into awful ending monologue, isn't it? As Count always, thank you so much for listening. Like, really, really appreciate it. And we know it's difficult. We know it's tough. There's nothing else to say about it, really. We just try and do what we do. We try and talk about football. We try and lighten the mood a little bit as much as we can. And if we've got you through, an hour of your week and kind of giving you a little bit of light relief, fantastic. If we haven't, sorry, there are other podcasts available, but we try. Ross, have a good week, sir. Enjoy it.
Yeah, you too.
And we'll see you guys. Have we got anything? Oh, no, we've got, we've got a big one next week. Do you want to announce our special guest, Ross?
We do have a big one next week. Yeah, so... yes, very exciting, Reading fans. We have the man behind the man, James Oliver Pearce, assistant manager of this wonderful club.
has agreed to come on and have a chat with us. So we're really excited, obviously, and we're very, very grateful to James for his time. We have had a list of questions sent out to him ahead of time, but we do want to do some sort of quickfire questions round like we did with Nick Blackman. So we'll put out that call later this week. But yeah, if there's anything, you know, a quick question that you fancy asking Mr. Oliver Pierce, then yeah, shoot him at us.
I'm really concerned I'm going to end up calling him James Ward-Prowse.
Well, just don't ask him what he's like on free kicks. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Who is the best Southampton player you've seen in your lifetime? Don't ask him that question.
Yeah. Don't ask him that question. I thought you were asking me for a minute, and then I thought you were about to out me as someone who's
been too many Southampton games.
The answer is Sadio Mane. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, have a really good week. Try and have a really good week as a Reading fan. We keep going, and we'll see you next week. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Ross, and come on, you ones. I'm not even joking. I'm sat in my kitchen and we have patio doors, but it goes the length of the wall basically, and they're obviously glass.
Yeah.
And a fox has literally just set off the outside light and come right up to the window.
Ooh.
I don't want to tell him, I can't see it because it's not going to work.
This is a sign that Leicester are not going to beat our record this season.
Yeah, but like you need to Google what a spirit animal is now in terms of a fox, because like could be something about a it could be like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's an odd one. Mischievous, skillful, self-assured. Is there anyone in your family that fits that bill?
He's still there.
Yeah.
Oh, anyone in my family? Yeah, me, obviously.
You, all right. Yeah. Perfect. You know this is all staying in, right?
It's what?